Blog Talk Radio.
There's a direct relationship between having the businesses and being in prison. Go find an see how many Asians you can find in American prisons. They ain't going to be in there. But 51% of your prison will be black because blacks don't have any businesses and industries. There's a direct link. Blacks won't practice group economics. Blacks won't practice group politics. If you don't practice, you're setting yourselves up. I told that five-story building, you're setting yourself to get wiped out. Understand the nature of race, which is economics. If you build the first floor, it's economic. Build your businesses and your industries. Control business and industry, and put that pulls in your money. And hold that money. And practice group economics with it. Arab and Asian money bounces 12 to 13 times for at least. Jewish money bounces 18 times. Black folk got to learn how to practice group economics. Black Americans spend every penny they get outside their own community. Then you take the money and the wealth that you get from that first floor and go to the second floor. The second floor is politics. You then take that money on the first floor and you control your politics. Black folk must quit allowing people to tell them to go out and vote. Vote for what? Nobody's going to do anything for black folk in politics. Politics is controlled by money. Major corporations who got the money. That's what controls politics. If you have no money, you have no say-so, you have no benefits coming. So you take your money and you control and you take your money on the first floor, you buy every politician on the second floor. And any politician you can't buy, you rent or lease them to get what you need. Then once you get the second floor under control with the politician, with your money, then you go to the third floor. The third floor then is the police department and the court system. You take your money from the first floor and your politics on the second floor and you control the court system and the police department. Then the fourth floor then is media. You then take the money that you generate off the first floor from business and industries and you go after radio stations, TV stations, newspapers, and cable systems so that you can now inform and communicate with your own people. Right now, black folk own and control less than 35 thousandths of 1% of the media in the United States. Out of 12,000 radio stations, black folk own about something like about 75 or 80. That's all. You own no cable systems. You don't have a daily newspaper. You have nothing of importance. You got about one black TV station. So you can't communicate with your people. You can't inform your people. You can't do anything. You can have Rush Limbaugh and all the rest of the guys talking about racism all day long and bad mouthing you. And O'Reilly, they can call black folk all kind of names all day long. What are you going to do? You can't respond. You can't even communicate with your own people because you don't have an economic base. 51% of all the prisons in the United States are black people. You only make up 12% of the population. That's no accident. It's because you don't control the economics and the politics. And they're going to go after the weakest people they can get their hands on to incarcerate them. That's the black folk. And what are you going to do in response to them when they over-incarcerate you? You're going to go out and have a march, a demonstration. We're going to march. March, what? Who cares? Marching, they never changed anything.
Thank you.
Many a young athlete entertains hoop dreams. Few, if any, have tried as hard to make them come true as the kid our Steve Hartman has gone to see.
Every week, he set himself up for disappointment. Every week, 13-year-old Jamarian Stiles came to this community center in Boca Raton, Florida, hoping to play basketball with the other kids. And every week, he was rejected.
They'll start picking teams, and I would be the only one left out. And then they'll just tell me, just go home and stuff. You can break someone's heart like that.
The problem was obvious to everyone but Jamarian. He lost his hands and most of his arms as an infant due to a rare bacterial infection. But he insisted that was no reason to give up his hoop dreams.
What about soccer? Have you heard of that sport?
Yeah, hear it every day.
Why don't you play soccer? That just seems like the obvious thing.
You would think that I would be good at soccer. I'm really not. I'm horrible.
Which is why, on the first day of class here at Eagles Landing Middle School, Jamarian took his case to basketball coach Darian Williams.
Yeah.
Said he wanted to be on the team this year.
I said, all great, well, just make sure you try out.
He said, okay, great, but what are you really thinking?
This man has no arms.
Yeah.
How is he going to play basketball? But, man, he told me, Mr. Williams, I've never been on a team before. Even if I don't play, I just want to be on the team. And how could I say no to that?
And that's how the Eagles got their first armless basketball player. Jamarian, number two there, quickly earned a reputation as the hardest worker on the squad.
He was usually the first one in the gym, usually the last one to leave.
Still, he sat on the bench most of the season.
Try one more.
Until last month. Coach put him in the game with about 6 minutes left. And when he eventually got the ball on the far side of the court, everyone yelled, shoot it! So he did. And sank. A three-pointer. And if you didn't quite see that, don't worry. Because shortly after, he got the ball again. This time on the near side. For another three-pointer. At the buzzer. Jamarian Stiles. The kid no one would pick. Was now everyone's hero. Needless to say, today, Jamarian can play all he wants at the community center. He just made the volleyball team and has every intention of playing football next year. Really, the only thing he won't play is the victim.
If I could wave a magic wand right now and give you your arms back, would you want them?
I don't need them.
You don't need them?
No.
Who needs hands when you've got this kind of touch?
Now, learn this from Joel Osteen. That's my man. He be texting me. That's my man. This, God done put some people around me, show me some stuff. He was telling this story. He said this man that went to heaven, and he was walking with Peter down this aisleway, and it was going down this corridor, had a lot of doors on it, and said all these doors had names on it. And he said, Peter, let me ask you something. What's all these doors, these names on? He said, don't worry about it. Just go ahead. So he kept walking. And mess around, he saw one of them doors and had his name on it. He said, whoa. He said, hey, Peter, this here ain't got my name on it. Something I need to know? He said, man, don't worry about that. You here now. Just go on in there and talk to him. See what he's here. He said, nah, I won't know what's in the door. He said, you sure you won't see what's in the door? He said, yeah. So he opened up the door. It was a warehouse. It had nothing but shelves on it. And then the shelves had nothing but packages. And all the packages had his name on them. And he said, what is all these boxes? He said, that's all of the blessings, all of the things God wanted to ship to you. But number one, you didn't ask him for it. Then number two, you didn't believe you would have it. Then you doubted him. And then you felt like you wasn't worthy. And so now all these boxes is up here. Now the man standing there wishing he had never even been in the room. And I started thinking. I got some dudes that work for me. And I said, I want you to do this graph for me. And that's what I'm finna show you now. See, what you happen is, when God sends your package, he only sends it to one street. That's Faith Street. You got to stay in faith. You can't move off of Faith Street. You can't get on Doubted Drive. You can't be over there and start doubting it because your package going to go right on by. You can't lose your faith and get on Not Meant to Be Way because your package is going to keep going right on by. Because the package just go to Faith Street. You can get your little feelings hurt, I ain't worthy. Guess what? Your package going to keep going right on by. You have not because you ask not. Then you sit up here and start feeling sorry for yourself. You go on Pity Way, your package keep going right on by. If you stay right on Faith Street, don't ever come off because the blessing is coming. If you wait on it, here it comes. It may not come when you want it, but it on time. But if you get up and you move off of Faith Street, your box gonna get sent back to sender. And now you're gonna have a warehouse with a bunch of boxes with your name on it that you didn't never get. And I don't know about you, but I want everything he got for me. If he got something for me, I need all of mine. Because I don't know about you, but God lay you out, man. God will give you stuff. Man, he done took me places. I ain't never thought I was going to go. I done seen parts of the world I never even thought I could go to. He done gave me stuff. He done put people in my life. God will do it for you, man. But you just got to stay, man. Use these principles of success. Understand, God is just that way. He'll lay you out. Because if he can lay me out, see, if he fix me and change me and get me over here trying to do better, I ain't perfect. I'm just trying to do better. I still say some stuff I ain't supposed to say. You understand? I ain't got it all together yet. I just got in the gate. I'm a new kind of Christian. But ain't no lock on my gate either. So if you see, once you check me, I'm probably going to check you back. But I'm getting better at that. I don't know how to love my enemies yet. I'm getting better at it, though. But it's a process. And the more times we can make people understand that it's a process, the more people can come in. And y'all people that have been good to me, that have been praying for me. I mean, man, my mama, if she could see me now, I just wish my mama could see me. Because she's been praying for this hill all her life. Watch my son. Well, he done watched me, mama. And I'm cool now. And my philosophy is very simple. I was who I was, but I am who I am. And I'm cool with both them people. Because who I was wasn't that bad cap. I made some mistakes, but I've been changed a little bit. And it's still a process. And the more people that you invite into the process, the better this is. Because ain't nobody perfect no how. So I really appreciate y'all, man, hearing me and listening to me. I'm going to ask Kirk Franklin if he will come.
Because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were.
With the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah.
Where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there and looking for jobs, that's usually why we move. And the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you... Sometimes you're right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing
that
as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a superhighway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build those shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because...
What's up, everybody? This is Jay, and this video is about is Tariq worth $2 million? Now, we all know that he's a damn fool and he deserves what he's getting, but is he worth $2 million? Before we do, let's hit that like button. I need to get 200 likes for this video, and if you haven't already, please subscribe and bang that bell. I'm trying to reach 20K subs by the end of the month. Let's get into it. Now, Tariq, we all know, is a damn fool. He doesn't listen to Ghost or Tasha, and he's been corrupted by Kanan and turned against his father by Kanan and Tasha, and now he thinks that he's a dope boy when all he is a dorm room dope boy. He doesn't know anything about real life situations. And so he tried to get over on Vincent and the Olive Garden dope boy crew, and he bought some baby aspirin and tried to pass it off as being some pills, ecstasy, or whatever the case. And no, that would not work. If anything, he would have been better off trying to cut it. But he's an idiot. He knows nothing about this. He thought because they look similar that Vincent wouldn't know anything. And yeah, maybe with the eye test he wouldn't know, but once they began to sell the merch, then people would complain saying that these were duds, that the
because I used to observe that a lot of those shacks used to be by the track where black people were,
with the room in the back.
Yes, with the room in the back. That was a safety net.
Yeah,
where black people who would move here and there and go from here and there looking for jobs, that's usually why we move, and the jobs would play out like they always did.
And do.
But we had a place to go when the sun went down. But now, those shacks by the track don't exist anymore. They came and built highways right alongside of those railroad tracks where those shacks used to be. Super highways. So now, if you get on a highway, you might notice that if you, sometimes you are right alongside of a railroad track. You see trains passing as you're driving.
That is true.
Down a super highway.
Mm-hmm.
Well, see, those highways used not to be there in the northwestern hemisphere. It used to be shacks along there. A lot of those shacks were on what we call railroad property. But the railroad people, the people that ran the railroads, didn't care much because nobody wanted to be down. That wasn't prime real estate.
No.
Nobody wanted to be by the tracks anyway. So black people used to build little shacks around there back when black people knew how to build shacks. Black people don't know how to build anything now because they used to build places for white people, but they cut them off with things called unions, took them out. Took the carpentry all out of the schools and all like that. So how many black people do you know how to fix anything now? It used to be thousands and millions of black people that know how to build a house from scratch out of old pieces of lumber.
Wow.
A lot of people don't remember that. Most people are not that old to have seen it done. I'm old enough to remember when many black people used to get together on a Saturday afternoon. That was the only time they had off, or sometimes, or on a Sunday sometimes after church. They would get together, six or eight of them, and go down and build what they call a shotgun house. It wasn't much, but it was a roof over your head, a good solid roof. I've been in some of those houses, raised up in some, all right? They were excellent, solid houses. They could stand a lot of storm and rain. They weren't much, just maybe three rooms. But I've been in some of them. And there were many, 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 many of them. But along came the white supremacists and say, these Negroes know how to build stuff. We're going to fix that so the next generation won't know how to do anything except stand in front of a place that is built and big. Because they won't know anything about carpentry or masonry or how to make anything with their hands.
Walk away and pass me by. balls out. Today's topic, if anybody wants to bite, should a trans woman be nominated Woman of the Year? Should a trans woman be nominated Woman of the Year? And on our scrolling marquee on Blog Talk Radio, we've got a couple of pictures of the trans woman who has been nominated by a particular university here in the United States as, I think, Woman in the Year in her particular sport of swimming. So that's the question of the day. 619-768-2945. That's if anybody wants to tackle that question. Should a trans woman be nominated as Woman of the Year? Okay, well, nobody's biting on that, so far at least. I almost didn't put that topic up there, but I said, oh, what the heck. All right, I'm just waiting for this next audio to queue up. I don't know if you guys can hear me. I've been having phone problems lately. All right, well, let's see what we have here. All right, well, once again, if you want to answer the question, should trans women be nominated Woman of the Year?
People who live in towns and cities in Uganda and many other African countries have some access to grid electricity to light their homes and power their businesses. But many rural people aren't connected at all. But simply waiting for the grid to arrive isn't good enough for entrepreneurs like Moses Akera. He recognizes there's a good business to be made harnessing the power of the sun.
I really prefer solar to be used in the community like this because it remains the property of the client. You don't pay bills and you don't buy fuel like somebody using generator.
So solar energy is the best option for many rural Ugandans. But being new to the industry, many solar retailers like Moses were struggling to make their businesses a success.
We don't have capacity to advertise ourselves, our products. We don't have capacity to have quality technical training.
So the Rural Energy Foundation, a not-for-profit organization, introduced the Solar Now program in 2007. Its aim, to spread the benefits of electricity throughout rural Africa by providing training and support to existing solar retailers like Moses. And they encourage other retailers and entrepreneurs to start selling solar equipment from scratch.
Most of these retailers need to be supported in terms of training so that they can be able to run their businesses better. They also need support in terms of market awareness because so many people out here in the field do not know about solar, so we need to come and enlighten them.
As well as training, the Rural Energy Foundation loans retailers portable demonstration kits, which they use to drum up business in local markets.
What we're trying to do is these people are off-grid and they do not have access to electricity. So we're trying to show them how solar can improve their lives. For instance, we try to show them how they can make money from solar. For instance, here with us we have a shaver, so they can use this to have barbershops. We also show them how they can use it to use light at their homes. See, when you have this light in your house, the children can study at night. They can use it in their shops to work longer hours, and they can use it at home.
If retailers want to use the Solar Now brand, they have to commit to providing high-quality installations and good after-sales service. The Rural Energy Foundation helps them achieve this by training solar technicians.
We're trying to get the entrepreneurs to sign service contracts So when they sell the product, it also comes with after-sales service. Let's say they have to check to make a phone call to the customer after a certain period to check if the system is working. And then till after some time through the service contract, they also have to go and actually do the inspection of the system.
The Rural Energy Foundation has trained over 200 retailers in 9 African countries. So far, they've sold 57,000 solar home systems and 36,000 solar lanterns. They've helped at least 400,000 people, saved nearly 5 million litres of kerosene and 12,000 tonnes of CO2 each year. Basil Okelo is impressed and has decided to buy the equipment from Moses to set up his own solar barbershop and phone charging business. He's taking advantage of a credit scheme which helps entrepreneurs buy equipment from SolarNow retailers to get their businesses going.
SolarNow is giving me a loan. I'm going to make a down payment of 25% now. Later, in 3 months' time, I'll make another 25%, making a total of 50%. Then the remaining I'll complete within a period of a year.
With his system now installed, Basil is optimistic about the future.
Because this is a new investment I'm going into. I have never been into this business before. But as I see, I have the expectation that I'll make money.
Moses is growing his solar retail business too. He already had a shop in town. With support from the Rural Energy Foundation, he's now set up a small village branch to cater specifically for his rural customers.
Rural Energy Foundation is very important to us. If they help us training technicians, we shall be in position to expand all over.
We hope that others will also adopt the private sector development approach. We don't want to be unique. We want to spread the word that this is a really efficient approach to get the technology diffused deeply into the rural markets.
The Rural Energy Foundation plans to expand into other African countries and broaden its range of sustainable technologies. Solar panels are now becoming a common sight here on homes, and shops buy them as well to run radios and offer phone charging, increasing their income and enabling people to communicate. And to everyone's delight, the local bar has installed a fridge powered by the sun. The owner is pleased with his investment.
Yeah, we're happy. Because it's cold, the beer tastes better, and so I get more customers.
Of course, the day you start something like this, is lights aren't going to come all the way on. Mood lighting.
Elliot Crump is the school superintendent in Shelby, Montana, one of the countless small rural towns that's run out of teachers.
Yeah, because that 20 minutes, the kids that come out of Bozeman and Missoula and our education schools here in Montana, they tend to focus on those larger cities. It's going to be nice to get them out here, see what it's like, and hopefully get them to join the rural teaching community.
250 miles away in Bozeman, 13 aspiring teachers from Montana State University headed out for Shelby.
What a good morning, gosh.
Shelby, Montana. I don't know too much about it. I looked it up on Google Maps. That's the only research I did. Zoomed in and it looked pretty brown, but it's okay. I'm excited anyway. I'm not there for the landscape, I'm there for the people.
I love small towns. I came from a small town, and I've always wanted to teach in a small school. So, yeah, I'm super stoked.
You are approaching your destination.
Ooh, we are approaching.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning.
So I'll go first. My name is Elliot Crump. I'm the superintendent here. I used to teach social studies. I'm originally from the Seattle area.
I'm Jake Lyle. I'm originally from Plains, Montana. Graduated there in 2016. I'm studying English teaching. I want to be an English teacher.
Good morning. My name is Ned Bardsley. When I grow up, I want to be an art teacher.
I would love the practicum students to go through this program. enjoy being here in Shelby. And when I have an opening next year, the year after that, the year after that, they're thinking, gosh, it would be really nice to be able to go back to Shelby and be a part of that community and that school. I don't know if it's going to work, but I hope it does.
Shelby, Montana spans 6 square miles and is home to about 700 families, one K through 12 school, and one Main Street that runs only a few blocks. It's 1.5 hours from the nearest Walmart, 3 hours from the nearest Costco, and 4 hours from the nearest major airport.
There are some districts in Montana that don't get an applicant for a job. You know, even 10 years ago, they were still pulling in people, getting applications, being more selective about who we can hire. Now it's just find someone.
Dr. Tina Versland researches rural education. For the last 3 years, she's helped run the program that sends future teachers on a week-long date with the towns that need them the most.
If you're a school and you can't fill teacher positions, what ends up happening to like your offerings? What ends up happening to your school, your students?
Can't find teachers. Young parents start to pull their kids out of school. They start sending them to neighboring schools. Maybe they leave that area. So schools can't find teachers. Schools die. Community dies.
Shelby isn't dead, but in small towns throughout Montana, this is already an emergency. Nearly half of all schools in the state now employ teachers who aren't certified, and almost all of those schools are in rural communities.
What was your temperature?
400. I think it's cooked.
That's good. So we met in New York. Started dating in New York.
I was a city girl. I never thought I would be like in Montana. When I told my parents I was moving to Montana, they're like, where is that? You moving to the mountains?
The state. So you've been here for 5 years. You've seen people come and go.
Yeah.
When we first got here, we hired 10 teachers, and I lost 8 of them within a year or two. I haven't heard of things that I haven't tried. If I heard about it, I would have tried it.
That's 36.
One of the things Elliot has pioneered, looking for teachers outside of the country, in places where $35,000 a year is a small fortune. 4 years ago, he hired his first teacher from the Philippines. He's since hired 4 more.
Shelby is like, oh my God, this is really a small town? And I didn't even see people walking on the streets and said, oh my gosh, this is kind of, it's like a ghost town or something.
I imagine you weren't like, I'm going to go teach in Shelby, Montana.
No. It's the Shelby he chose me. Even though we don't have that much of shopping malls and all the stuff, but we like the simplicity of Shelby. I could send money to my family back in the Philippines, and I could also save money. So it's really, really helpful.
So bringing the Filipino teachers here has worked, right? They've come, they've wanted to stay. How it works in the long run, I'm not sure. Their end of their visa is going to be after 3 years, then they can get a 2-year extension. After that, they'll be heading back to the Philippines.
It doesn't sound like a long-term solution to the problem.
It doesn't sound like a long-term solution.
Congratulations. That's why Elliot and the whole town rolled out the red carpet for the MSU students.
Shape. Equal last. There we go. X. Nice job. All right. Equal out of triangle.
Welcome to your favorite class.
Yeah, me sure.
Yeah.
All right. First off, how y'all doing with it?
Good.
Okay, so you're going to try to capture that briefly as well.
When they weren't in classrooms teaching, they were given the star treatment. They took Shelby's fire trucks out for a joyride. They shot guns. And they went bowling. But 20-somethings are 20-somethings. They want to know what happens after 8 p.m. on a school night.
See what the first one we get. Oh, come on.
Casey, 22.
How do you up your age? I think I'm going to need to do that.
Oh, yeah, definitely do that.
How do you do it?
I got two.
You don't have a lot of options.
I don't have many options here.
This is 76 miles. I moved up to 50, and then
but you, I mean, you could be like a really big fish in a small pond.
It's true. Maybe.
Hello.
Hi.
I'm Rochelle.
Josh.
Josh, nice to meet you.
So for someone in their 20s, like, what are the sort of things that you end up doing?
Well, other than going out on a county road and just shooting gophers or shooting basically anything, I mean, as far as the community goes, we have pool league, dart league, bowling league. When you're bored, you're bored.
Oh, bro.
Who here would move to this area if they were offered a job today?
I'd have to talk to my fiance. I'm like, I can't like totally put up my hand.
Jake, you're super down to move here. Like, you would move here now, but your immediate response was, if I can convince my fiance.
It'd be a hard sell probably for my fiance. She's an interior designer, and there's probably not many interior design jobs around Shelby.
I think the issue is a social life. So like, the school's great, but what are you going to do outside of school?
Bowling league!
Small towns are probably not for everybody, but you owe it to yourself to give it a chance to do more than drive through it and experience it for yourself.
I don't know how long I can stay, and I think that's the problem we're facing. I don't know how I can help that.
Teacher shortage challenge and this education gap or challenge that Montana towns and small towns are facing in America.
I was calling teachers in Florida and California and all over the country to try and find teachers for these positions, just begging people to apply, not even to take the job, just to apply and take a look at us. And I just wasn't getting any applicants, or I get one applicant or two applicants, and they were people that I didn't feel had the skills to be successful teaching kids.
But what is a qualified teacher look like that the kids deserve in Shelby? What does that mean?
When that teacher goes into that class, the students are engaged in what is going on. They're interacting with the material, they're learning the material, and then they're able to apply it afterwards. That's what needs to happen. And I believe all of our Filipino teachers are doing that.
And so how did you even find a solution that, you know, that you can recruit from outside the country?
Just the idea that I want somebody that has a native English-speaking background. I want them to be able to come in and offer a high-quality education to my students, and I want them to be excited about coming to Montana and earning that salary, and hopefully I can get the town to grow on them in the long run, right? I think there are a lot of kids that are going off to college, and they're choosing to go into other professions. And when they choose to go off into those other professions, a lot of times that they pay more, and I think that's the initial reason. And so you have fewer people getting into the teaching market, and yet we still have the same number of these small schools.
Is it because teachers are not getting paid enough, that it's not a competitive salary that helps them live the life that they deserve?
I think that's part of it. You know, this conversation is happening in Montana. If you went down to Wyoming, the conversation would be very different. They are rural America, but they don't have the same problem. They forced consolidation in that state, and they got into a situation where they're able to pay teachers more, and so teachers will tend to go there and apply for those positions. I haven't heard of teacher shortages in Wyoming like I've heard of them in Montana.
How severe, or how bad, or is it even bad, this teacher shortage that's happening here in Montana?
It certainly is. I don't feel it in Shelby because I think we've found candidates that are high quality, that are willing to come here and work in Montana and in Shelby. Example, our Filipino teachers. They do a fantastic job. So to me, I don't feel like there is a teacher shortage because every time I turn around and I need to get a candidate for something, I can go to my contacts and ask, hey, I need a candidate for this particular position, and I'll have 20 candidates tomorrow.
Yeah. There's a conundrum here.
We have these candidates that are coming over. They've been teaching for 20 years. They've got a master's degree in their subject area, and I'm having difficulty getting them certified in the state of Montana.
Why is that?
It's beyond because they didn't get their degree from somewhere in the United States. So I see them in the classroom, and they're doing a fabulous job, and yet I need to send them back to school to get additional credit so that they can become certified in the state of Montana. And I can get away with it for 3 years. I can get them a provisional. But once they get that extension, those last 2 years, they've got to finish classes and they've got to do additional work to get that certification. So I understand it's been a headache over the past 3 years, but it's been worth it because it's benefiting my kids.
In this political climate that we have...
Hi, folks. In this video, I'd like to talk about how to have a home with no house payments and no monthly utility bills. You may think that's not possible, but I do it, and lots of other people do it as well. I'm going to show you how it can be done, how it can be done very inexpensively, and just kind of give you some ideas for things that you can do that society and the economic powers that be don't want you to know. So stay with me for a second, and let me walk you through this. First, you need some land. This is my piece of land, which is under an acre, about 3/4 of an acre. And that's really all you need to take care of most of the needs you have and for running a small homestead. Now, I was lucky enough to get this piece of property from family. It was willed to me when my father passed away. But I have also purchased small pieces of property like this for under $400. I have an acre down in Arizona near Sholo, Arizona that I purchased for under $400. I have 5 acres near El Paso, Texas that I purchased for under $700. So it's very easy to find a piece of land if you do some looking around. eBay is a good source for finding land. Tax sales are a good source for finding land. Family members may want to sell off a piece of land. Go around looking in rural areas, and maybe you'll find a farmer that wants to split off a small piece of land and would gladly sell you one. You don't have to spend a lot of money on land, okay? This is land that doesn't have utilities run to it. It doesn't have a blacktop road that runs into it or driveway. It's rough land. That's what you start with usually if you want to buy a small piece of land that you're going to homestead on. After you have your piece of land, then you're going to have a house. You can have a big house like most people live in, and you can pay a lot of money for it and have a mortgage and be a slave to the system for another 30 years, or you can decide if you'd like to build a smaller house like mine. Paid for with cash. This is my solar cabin. The cabin cost me $2,000 to build. That does not include the doors and windows, which I salvaged off of a trailer that was being torn down. For the cabin, it cost me $2,000. It is 14 by 14. Downstairs is living area, dining area, bathroom, kitchen. Upstairs, I have a loft, bedroom, and an office. In my other videos, I take you on a complete walkthrough of this cabin, so watch those if you want to see how the cabin is as large as it is and functional on the inside. Up there on my roof, you see my solar panels. That's a 350-watt solar system that provides all of my electricity needs for lights, TVs, water pumps, all miscellaneous gadget, laptop, TV, run my vacuum, and everything else off of a 350-watt system. That 350-watt system cost me under $3,000. $2,000 for the cabin, $3,000 for the power system of solar electricity, and I use propane. I have a propane tank in the back of the cabin, and I have a propane furnace, fridge, stove, and on-demand water heater, and those cost me just about $200 for an entire year. And we have cold winters here, folks. Under $200 for an entire year for all of my propane. That is the only utility bill I have. I do not pay for electricity. I do not pay for water because I drilled my own water well. Before I drilled my own water well, though, I hauled water in. But drilling a water well on a piece of property is not that hard. You can either do it yourself or hire somebody to do it. So I have no monthly utility bills. I have a house that's completely paid for. And I have freedom. A freedom that you can't get when you're under the pressure of a mortgage and utility bills. I want you to take just a minute and think about what you could do with your life if you had no house payments and no utility bills. And I'm telling you, it is completely possible. I'm not going to go into any details of how to get out of the house that you're in. You're going to have to figure that out and talk to some professionals for some help that way. All I'm here to do is tell you it's completely possible. Now, some of you are looking at the cabin and saying, yeah, but I couldn't possibly live in anything that small. This cabin was designed specifically for additions to be built on any of three sides. As you can see, the cabin has no windows on any of the three sides. There is a window in the back door glass. The sides are 14 by 14. The cabin was built to have shed additions built on all three sides. This cabin is 400 square feet approximately inside with 200 square foot footprint. When you add on additions, you could add on an additional 400 square feet on either side and off the back, giving you anywhere from 800 to 1,200 square feet. The great thing about building a small cabin to start out with, though, is it gives you a place to live when you build on your additions, and that way you can wait and live very cheaply without any house payments or utility bills, and then when you have the money, you can build on the additions to expand the cabin. That's very good for a single person or a young couple who don't have children because you don't need a whole lot of space to start off with. This way you can save for it, build on as you want to, have the additions, have the extra room if that's what you want. Now, I live full-time in this cabin. I live by myself, but my girlfriend comes up here on the weekends, and we stay together, and let me tell you, it's perfectly comfortable. We don't feel cramped at all, and we'd much rather have a small place like this. It takes a lot less money to heat. It takes a lot less money to cool. It's a lot easier to clean. It's just a fantastic home. Now, I'm not trying to push you into building a home exactly like mine. I'm just trying to provide you with some ideas. If you wanted to come up with different ideas, a different plan, that's just fine by me. But if you are interested in learning how to build a home like mine, I do have an ebook available and a printed book available called Simple Solar Homesteading. Go to www.simplesolarhomesteading.com. You can learn how to build a cabin like mine or at least get some great ideas for building your own home. Now, I want to repeat. I own my land. I have a house that I built for under $2,000. I have a solar electric system that I have for under $3,000. I use propane, which costs me under $200 a year. I have no house payments. I have no utility bills. If you want a life like this, it is very possible. You can stop listening to the media, and you can stop being put under society's pressures to live in the type of houses that everyone tells you you have to live in. You can live very inexpensively, and you can do this at any age, whether you're older or younger. If you're younger and you start in a place like this, imagine the amount of money that you would have to retire on, with no house payments, no utility bills, and freedom. Thank you for joining me, folks. Please watch the rest of my videos for more detailed information on each of the systems and a complete walkthrough of the cabin.